I vote yes. We're back in session. Mr. Moore, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the time that the County Council will start its hearing process. When Council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because Council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend a comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. I will announce each application. The director will provide Council with a copy of the minutes from the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made a part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the planning and zoning hearing. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present testimony supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their case, Council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. Any persons who are present and oppose the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition. After opposition statements are made, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless Council decides to leave the record open. If you intend to speak, you are required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand, state your name and home address before you make a statement. It's my understanding there is a clipboard that we ask you to sign in. If you would please print your name on that as well. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. If you have a written statement, hand it to me, and it will be made part of the record. You are not required to read your written statement. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Please do not do anything that distracts from these proceedings. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to cut that off or switch to silent service. The applicant or their representative will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, Council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, Council will do likewise. Okay, the first hearing that is scheduled for tonight is Joseph M. and Melissa R. Crispin. And Mr. Lank?
Yes, this is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for a contracting business to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 41,542 square feet, more or less, lying north of Route 9, 2,800 feet west of Route 261, and being Lot 10 within Stamper Farms. For the benefit of the Council, I'm passing down a copy of the site plan for this application, which is the same site plan as a previous application on this site for A1 Fencing Company, a use that just did terminate on that site. The Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on August 27th of 2009. We received comments from the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division. We also were advised that by the Department of Transportation that a commercial entrance permit had been granted for the A1 Fencing Company. Joseph Crispin was present with Tommy Cooper of Cooper Realty and gave testimony. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to this application. At the conclusion of the public hearings, the Commission discussed this application. Mr. Johnson stated he would move that the Commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1846 for Joseph M. and Melissa R. Crispin for a contracting business based upon a record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, this property previously received conditional use approval for a fencing company under ordinance number 1794. This application is seeking approval for a contracting business, which is not materially different from the prior approval. to the applicant has stated that he will abide by the conditions imposed on the prior conditional use by ordinance number 1794. Three, the use of the contracting business will generate less traffic than the prior fencing company. Four, this approval is subject to the following conditions. A, this conditional use shall incorporate the same conditions as ordinance number 1794. And B, the final site plan approved as part of ordinance number 1794 shall remain in effect and be valid for this conditional use. There was a motion and a second and carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated, and that motion carried 5-0. I did receive one additional agency comment on September 1st. That was from the Sussex Conservation District. We are advised that there are two soil types on this property, that the applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during any construction and to maintain vegetation, that there are no storm flood hazard areas affected, no tax ditches affected, and that it may not be necessary for any on-site or off-site drainage improvements. Attached to that memorandum is a copy of an aerial infrared showing the tax parcels and also an aerial photograph, a report on the soils, and also a copy of a two-page summary of prime and other important farmland. For the benefit of council, the original ordinance number of 1794, there were 11 conditions of approval, and I will read those into the record. There shall be no displays of products or materials in the front yard setback area. Two, all materials shall be stored in a storage building not to exceed 30 by 60. There shall be no outside storage of materials. Three, one non-lighted ground sign not exceeding 32 square feet per side or facing may be permitted. Four, the applicant shall obtain a commercial entrance permit and make such improvements as required by DLDOT. Five, all fabrication of fencing gates or similar products shall be prepared in the storage building. There shall be no fabrication work performed outside. Six, the storage building shall not exceed one story and shall not exceed the height of the existing dwelling on the premise. The location of the building shall be subject to site plan review. Seven, business hours shall be limited to 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., 6 days per week with no Sunday hours. Eight, any dumpster shall be located in a fenced enclosure inside of the existing stockade fencing. Nine, security lighting shall be installed with downward illumination and screening so that it does not impact neighboring properties or motorists traveling along Route 9. 10, all vehicles and utility trailers associated to the business shall be parked within the existing stockade fencing in a designated parking area. And 11, the site plan shall be subject to review and approval by the Planning and Zoning Commission upon receipt of all appropriate agency approvals. In giving consideration to those conditions, the commission asks that all those conditions be abided by or incorporated as the same conditions as this previous application. And therefore, the site plan, as approved by that ordinance, shall remain in effect and be valid for this conditional use. Thereby, if approved, it would not require a site plan review by the commission. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Any questions for Mr. Lang? Hearing none, Mr. Moore.
Is Joseph M. and Melissa R. Crispin in attendance? You come forward, please, and state your name for the record and address.
I'm Tommy Cooper, president of Cooper Realty Associates, representing Mr. Crispin, and we appreciate the opportunity to appear from you and have your consideration on this matter. As Mr. Lank stated, our use will be actually less traffic-wise than the previous and existing conditional use. As far as the conservation district concerns, there's no additions or remodeling to take place, which would cause them to be concerned about this. And the traffic that was currently used as far as where it was retail and the fencing customers would come bid the jobs there. Mr. Crispin's roofing company is strictly bid from Prince and would not require that. All the other terms and conditions are most acceptable to us. And if you have any questions, we'd certainly be happy to answer them.
Mr. Cooper, Mr. Crispin currently own, or is he under contract to purchase his property?
It's under contract to purchase.
It is under contract.
You have currently have that location further down Route 9, right?
Yes, sir.
Weren't you in front of us years ago?
Yes, it's my Tom Ream is my father-in-law. It's his property on Route 9.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Will it be strictly for business use, or would there be a residence, somebody living there?
There might be someone living there, yes, in the house in the front.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a tenant?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any other questions from the council?
If Lawrence, not, we didn't have any complaints on the other conditional use, did we?
No.
Okay.
Fencing business is not good, huh? Okay.
Is there anyone else here in favor of this application that would like to speak or raise your hand? Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Again, is anyone here in opposition? Seeing none, Mr. President.
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. You can be seated.
Thank you for your consideration.
If there's no objections from council, we'll ask our attorney to read the title.
An ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a contracting business to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 41,542 square feet of land, more or less.
Need a motion, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
With those conditions, Lawrence, should we somehow reference in this approval the old conditions, or how should that be worded, probably?
The safest way.
The safest would be.
So that is clear that they should be incorporated into the record of the motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They were either stated in the motion. Mm-hmm.
Could we do that, gentlemen and ladies? Who made that motion? Is it okay?
Who made the motion?
Yeah. Could somebody read them, I guess? Maybe Everett or somebody?
Mr. Lang, do you have those in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Make sure we're good and clear.
And if I can, the reasons were already read. When I get to B on the site plan, I'll just read what the commission's statement was on that B, because it makes reference that you don't have to come back for a site plan because it's already there, basically.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. If this was were to be approved, the conditions of approval would be that there shall be no display of products or materials in the front yard setback area. Two, that all materials shall be stored in a storage building not to exceed 30 by 60. There shall be no outside storage of materials. Three, one non-lighted ground sign not exceeding 32 square feet per side or facing may be permitted. Four, the applicant shall obtain a commercial entrance permit and make such improvements as required by DLDOT. Five, all fabrication of fencing, gates, and similar products shall be prepared in the storage building. There shall be no fabrication work performed outside. Six, the storage building shall not exceed one story and shall not exceed the height of the existing dwelling on premise. The location of the building shall be subject to site plan review. Seven, business hours shall be limited to 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., 6 days per week with no Sunday hours. Eight, any dumpster shall be located in a fenced enclosure inside the existing stockade fencing. Nine, security lighting shall be installed with downward illumination and screening so that it does not impact neighboring properties or motorists traveling along Route 9. 10, all vehicles and utility trailers associated to the business shall be parked within the existing stockade fencing in a designated parking area. And 11, the final site plan as approved as part of ordinance number 1794 shall remain in effect and be valid for this conditional use.
I'll accept that as Mr. Vinson's motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve conditional use 1846 with the conditions and additional information read by Mr. Lang.
Yeah. I've got a question on one question.
Are there any questions? Ms. Deaver.
They're visualizing heavy equipment being on the property, coming in and out of the property. As far as if that's concerned, I'm sure that DLDOT will be aware of that and account for it. My concern is that it's on Route 9 and it's a lot of heavy, slow-moving equipment. coming in and out of the property. I'm not sure how much we're talking about here, what kinds of equipment. How would we know what we're talking about on that?
You should ask the applicant.
All right.
With the public hearing closed.
Does the public hearing is closed, yeah. And there is a motion on the floor at the current time.
He's a roofer contractor?
Roofing contractor, right? So, I mean, basically, the material is all delivered to the site.
That's what it is.
He just takes his pickup trucks.
Roofing business, okay.
Yeah, small pickup truck.
Good. That's what I needed to know. Thank you.
There are no further questions. We'll call a vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
With reasons, please.
Well, with reasons. Reasons are that the Planning and Zoning Commission has thoroughly studied it and recommended approval with conditions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Vincent?
With the conditions based on the fact that it should be less traffic than there is there now with the other business and the fact that Planning is recommended, I would guess.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Since there was a conditional use in that location prior to this application, and the conditions are similar, and there were no complaints, and it was compatible, I'll vote yes.
I vote yes as well. It's an appropriate application. Motion carried. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next, Mr. Moore?
Yes, the next matter is change of zone number 1687 and conditional use number 1845. And the applicant, through a letter from Dennis Schrader, Esquire, has requested permission to consolidate the hearings into one presentation and acknowledging that the decisions will be rendered on each application separately. And Mr. Lang?
Yes. Change of zone 1687 is the application of Rick Fanning to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a MR medium density residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, land lying northeast of Plantation Road, also known as Road 275, 710 feet southeast of Shady Road, also known as Road 276, to be located on 18.33 acres, more or less. Conditional use number 1845, the application of Rick Banning to consider the conditional use of land in a MR medium density residential district for multifamily dwelling structures to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 18.33 acres, more or less, lying northeast of Plantation Road, also known as Road 275, 710 feet southeast of Shady Road, also known as Road 276. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on August 27th of 2009. The applicants, for the benefit of those parties present, and introduced an exhibit booklet similar to this one. The council have copies of the exhibit booklet, and it is a part of the record. These copies were received on September, 18th of 2009. For the benefit of council, I also copied all the correspondence that were not a part of the exhibit booklet, whether provided by the applicant, whether provided by opposition in the form of letters, emails, or faxes. And this is about an inch thick, and it's both sides, printed on both sides, and all the council have copies of these also. But you don't want to hear me read them all. I guarantee that.
Thank you for helping.
So they are a part of the record, and in the comments of the petitions, letters, memorandums, and emails from interested parties in opposition, they included petition from the residents of Eagle Point containing 84 signatures, a cover letter and petition from residents of Henlopen Landing subdivision containing 60 signatures, and then a multitude of letters from individuals. Rick Banning was present. With Dennis Schrader, attorney of Wilson, Halbrook, and Byard, Linda Smith, James Willey, professional engineer from GMB, David Savakis, environmental scientist from JCM Environmental, and Derek Kennedy, a traffic consultant with Orth Rogers and Associates Incorporated, and gave testimony. There were two representatives of DENREC present in attendance, and were also asked if they would participate in some questions, and they were Lindsay Hall and Timothy Rapsett of the Air and Waste Management Division. We had approximately 20 speakers spoke in opposition and gave testimony. We also received at the end of their testimony additional letters, which are part of the packet also. Promotional renderings, or copies of promotional renderings of the original proposal for the site, which was for 80 units. Aerial photographs, et cetera, which are also part of the record. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed the application. There was a motion by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Mr. Burton, and carried unanimously that the record be left open on change of zone 1687 for receipt of the county rental agreement, and that action be deferred for further consideration, and that motion carried 5-0. There was also a motion by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Mr. Burton, and carried unanimously that the record be left open on conditional use 1845 for receipt of a county rental agreement, and that action be deferred for further consideration. And again, that motion carried 5-0. The correspondence that I did submit to the council, or copies of the correspondence I received up to today. I did just receive a few minutes ago a copy of a letter voicing opposition, and it's signed by Marilyn Costas, and I will provide copies to the council of that letter also, and it is also a part of the record. And I did also receive today a copy of the cover letter from William LeCates, director of the County Community Development and Housing Division, and a letter written to Rick Banning of Mid-Atlantic Development Ventures, LLC, making reference to the rental agreement, and the rental agreement is attached to that letter. And I believe that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Lank?
Mr. Lank, originally this came in under a CU, didn't it, conditional use?
Originally, several years ago, it came in as a conditional use for 80 units.
80 units.
Right.
And it could be, you could build 80 units using that conditional use, couldn't you?
Only if they applied for a conditional use in the AR district
using
for
a,
that.
Using
they could still apply for that same number.
But the reason you've got an additional, like a rezoning, is for the extra units, is that right?
The conditional use that they previously obtained for 80 units was void because of lack of construction.
Right, but they needed also a rezoning.
For this application, for the number that they were requesting, they needed to rezone it to MR so that they could apply for the conditional use for a greater density than...
Okay, to extra homes.
Than two units.
Extra units. Okay, I understand.
Or four
Thank
units.
You. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Lang? We will ask the applicant, just as we are going to ask the public, not to be redundant so that we can keep this process moving.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. For the benefit of the record, my name is Dennis Schrader. I'm the attorney for the applicant, and if you'll permit me two administrative items. Mr. Moore, I think you referred to this, but it's never left the podium, which is the sign-in sheet. I'm wishfully thinking that means no one will speak in opposition.
That's sign-in.
It's there for when they come
in the
up.
Morning.
You got here late.
Or early session, not this session.
And for Mr. Lang, I've tendered a number of copies of the rental agreement that's perforated so you can put it in your books with the rest of the information.
Before you start, that clipboard was for those that speak. If you'd mind putting it
so
back on the podium.
Take this back and...
How about if I put it under here until I get done?
And no one is going to be redundant, right? That Mr. President, you didn't mean just the public, did you?
I think I made it clear that I was speaking to the applicant in particular.
The man in the back there, if anybody gets redundant, will you please come down and...
And that includes everybody.
He's the redundant czar back there.
Redundant czar. Redundant czar.
Well, I'm not going to be any more redundant than I have to be, but we do have applications, so I get two starts, right, Mr. Right, Paul?
Well, you're paid to be redundant. You're a lawyer.
Thank you. Ms. Deaver, gentlemen, we do have an application before you known as change of zone application number 1687 and conditional use 1845, as Ms. Deaver got from Mr. Lang, there are reasons for why there are two applications. One is to rezone the property to MR. The other is to get a conditional use on the property in order for us to have multifamily dwellings. You have ruled upon the request for the consolidation of applications, and that will help facilitate the presentation this evening as it did a couple of weeks ago before the Planning Commission. I would like to introduce to you Mr. Banning, who is the owner's representative, and I do have some members of the design team. They include Mr. Willie, who is likely known to you from George Miles and Buer. I have Doug Seavey, who is an environmental engineer with JCM. I have Derek Kennedy, who is a traffic engineer with Orth Rogers, and I have Linda Smith, who is a rental market person who will describe for you all the necessity and the marketability of this particular project. You have received updated books compared to those that were previously presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission. The differences are minor. There is, in fact, the August 14th letter, 2009, from McCormick Taylor, which is the traffic impact statement analysis by DelDOT's engineers, and includes the request for the off-site improvements that were referred to in the draft letter, which was a part of the prior presentation. And you also now have the rental contract between the county and the applicant, which puts us into the Sussex County rental program.
Has the public had an opportunity to see those updates or changes?
I can't speak as to the rental contract between the county, because that was only tendered yesterday by the county to the applicant and signed and presented back. I assume that it's in a form similar to those that are used with the moderately priced housing situation. The second one, the August 14th letter from McCormick Taylor, was a part of the record of the Planning and Zoning Commission. It was introduced after the, it came in after the booklets were required to be filed with the Planning Commission, but they are part of the Planning Commission record. And so I presume that the public had the opportunity to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-Atlantic Development Ventures is the applicant, or the owner of the property. Mr. Banning is the applicant. There have been a number of design professionals involved in this project. I'm sure that if you read the papers, you're aware that there are a number of opponents to this project who have raised some serious concerns about this particular site and the effect that it will have on the Plantations Road community. For that reason, we do have George Miles and Buer, who are the civil engineers, provided the site planning and did a lot of the detailed engineering available this evening. We have JCM Environmental, which will discuss the brownfields qualification and certification for the remediation of this project site. And lastly, Orth Rogers, which will discuss the traffic impact. This site, if you take a look at this board where we have superimposed an overlay on an aerial photo, is uniquely, I was corrected at the Planning and Zoning Commission. I had said that it was behind Home Depot, but it is nestled in between two other projects, including Eagle Point and Home Depot, and is behind a site that's called the Thompson site, behind a church on Plantations Road. And Plantations Road is the road that you see running from the upper left-hand corner towards the bottom middle of the site. Route 1 is the four-lane highway that you see curving across the top of the board that's up. This site contains 18.33 acres, more or less. It's currently zoned AR1 Agricultural Residential District and previously was the subject of Conditional Use 1522, which was awarded this site in the year of 2004, as Ms. Deaver elicited from Mr. Lang. It was for 80 units, and that conditional use has expired. What we are seeking this evening, and hopefully with the blessing of the commission and the council, is an MR medium-density residential district with a conditional use for the multifamily dwellings. If those two items are granted, and we've acknowledged that they have to be separately dealt with, there would be 216 apartments proposed for this site, a portion of which would be under the affordable rental program that Sussex County has put in effect. This particular project is, in fact, the first of those projects to be going through the affordable rental program, and we will discuss the details of that a little later on in our presentation. This site under the county land use plan is in a growth area. It is an environmentally sensitive developing area, and under the state strategies map, it is a level Two, we have submitted to you copies of all the various reports, studies, and correspondence from the various agencies with which we have had contact, and some other graphic displays that will help you better understand this particular project as you go through your deliberative process. I would point out to you that the solid waste removal will be through the Sussex County West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. Thus, it will be served publicly. Water will be supplied by Tidewater Utilities. There are no delineated wetlands on this site. And I would lastly point out that, in my opinion, and perhaps in the opinion of the ladies and gentlemen here behind me, this particular project has resulted in a fairly emotional response by the community in which it has been proposed to be placed. There are some things we actually agreed upon and some things that we do have disputes over. But the two single largest items that we think that will be for your consideration will be the traffic and the environmental impacts. But before we get to that, I really need to get Mr. Willie on to go through a quick review of the site plan, how we got where we are today, the planning and design process, and the comp plan considerations that take place. So I'm going to defer at this moment, Mr. President, to Mr. Willie and let him make his presentation.
Good evening. My name is James Willie, Jr., Senior Vice President George Mullen Buer, Delaware Professional Engineer 13710. Address is 206 West Main Street, Salisbury, Maryland. As Mr. Schrader mentioned, for purposes of the record, I need to cover some points. With regard to the overview of the site, Mr. Schrader has covered most of the pertinent items. However, I will mention that the site is within the Environmentally Sensitive Development District Overlay Zone. It is a certified brownfield site. The preliminary site plan that was provided in support of this application meets the county code with regard to parking, buffer, setbacks, building separation, and state fire marshal office site plan requirements. The site plan submitted in support of this application includes 50% impervious cover, which is less than the 60% required and noted in Ordinance 89, your Source Water Protection Act. There are 2.7 acres in the landscaped forested buffer surrounding the property. In order to sort of explain how we got to where we got, I'd like to just briefly touch on the planning and design process and design considerations. The Delaware State Housing Authority needs assessment identified rental housing in Eastern Sussex County as an immediate need, further noting that the comp plan for Sussex County calls out that 59% of Sussex County workers have an income that makes a two-bedroom apartment at market rate unaffordable. There's also a recognized need to provide workforce housing, particularly rental housing, near the beach and resort areas. This site has a history of multifamily approval. We've mentioned the prior conditional use. Looking at the exhibit, as we mentioned earlier, Mr. Schrader pointed out, the orientation basically is north to the top of the page. You will note that the largest amount of green space is on the southern side of the site. It's adjacent to existing single-family housing development. I believe that's Maplewood. We have, and again, understanding this is a rezoning issue, not a site plan issue per se, we just want to touch on the community design elements from the comp plan. You'll notice the photo below the proximity map of a similar project which Mr. Banning operates in Harrington. Those photos indicate pitched roofs on the building in accordance with the community design elements. There's also a mixed siding and stone to provide accent on the building fascia. Our site also includes sidewalks for pedestrian mobility. We have street trees on the entrance drive. We have trees in the parking islands. We have the landscape wooded buffer on the perimeter. The open space to the south of the property, which I previously described, is indicated on the landscaping plan to have a mix of turf grass and tall grasses, utilizing indigenous landscaping. and we have implemented some green building ideas. You'll notice that the buildings are all southward facing. The preliminary site plan submitted in support of this application utilizes bioretention and small rain gardens throughout the interspersed throughout the buildings and not just one large pond. And finally, I would point out that the Green Building Council, the LEED accreditation program, that they do award site design points for building on a remediated brownfield. So that is a definite positive with regard to green building certification. Not that we're trying to be certified, but with regard to points that wouldn't be available were we to seek certification. Okay. With regard to the comp plan, it's shown on the existing land use plan as undeveloped lands. The future land use maps this as the environmentally sensitive developing area. This site is not within a potential municipal annexation area or an area of concern. This site is within a level two for the state strategy policies on spending. It is not listed on the exhibit contained within protected lands. I believe Mr. Schrader already mentioned this is in the Tidewater Utilities water service area. This site is not within a water supply, wellhead, or excellent recharge area per the comp plan. It is located within an existing Sussex County wastewater service area. There will be a complete presentation on the environmental aspects, but I will just briefly mention that it was certified on January 29th, 2009 as part of the State Brownfield Site Voluntary Cleanup Program. Project considerations with regard to the moderately priced, affordably priced rental unit. Mr. Schrader mentioned the agreement has just been forwarded, made part of the record. Other requirements specifically are that in the July 21st, 2009 Sussex County approval of the project to participate in the county rental program required a minimum of 32 units to be dedicated to the program. And we will have realty experts speak to the affordably priced and rental issues later in the presentation, so I won't go into that. To briefly cover the PLUS review and response, we presented before PLUS on December 17th, 2008. Office of State Planning responded with their comments on January 15th, 2009. We responded to those comments on March the 11th, 2009. On March 31st, 2009, Office of State Planning Coordination sent a letter confirming the adequacy of the developer's response and that the state has no objections to development of the site. We'll note a couple of the comments that we addressed and have talked about with regard to PLUS. One of the issues that brought up a lot of excitement at the forum for public hearing was the DLDOT request for interconnections between Arbor and Eagle Point. You will note that on the site plan we submitted, there's a proposed sidewalk connection. If the council and the Eagle Point residents feel that that's not something they wish to have, DLDOT can't make us do that, so it can be removed. The other connection, and I'll just point on the lower left-hand side of this exhibit center. That location, just beyond the entrance to the site, there is a DLDOT requested interconnection to the Thompson parcel. Basically, that would be a stubbed off street under this site plan. The other issues noted in the PLUS review and response is that the DLDOT TIS is in the ongoing stages of negotiation, and we received the standard comments from the fire marshal, county engineering, and the other agencies. Okay, let me just briefly cover the housing types proposed. You've heard that we're proposing 216 multifamily rental units. These units range in size from 750 square feet for the single bedroom units to 1,100 square feet for the three bedroom units. Our unit mix is as follows. We're proposing 54 one-bedroom units, 140 two-bedroom units, and 22 three-bedroom units. Our moderately priced units must be integrated throughout the project. They cannot be segregated all in one spot, and they must also be built with the proper percentage in each phase. Density. With regard to density, the plan shown before you contains 11.8 units per acre. This density is consistent with other similar projects in Delaware, including Mr. Bannon's Friendship Village project, for which we have the pictures, and also with another project he operates in Dover, known as Cannon Mills. Density helps to reduce housing costs. We need this density to make the project work. We have cleanup costs, infrastructure costs, and the moderately priced housing units also come at a cost to the developer. Finally, we would note that the County Council recognized the need for this type of project when they approved the Sussex County Rental Program. Recreational facilities include swimming pool, community center with fitness room, a playground including a tot lot with 3/4 acres open space adjacent to the tot lot. There is open space and buffers around the project which are suitable for walking paths, and there's open turf space appropriate for lawn games. With regard to phasing, phase one of this project will include the recreational amenities, the landscape buffer surrounding the entire project, required stormwater management, and the first 72 units, which is three buildings. And as I mentioned previously, we have to include our moderately priced units in all phases. Phase two will be the next 72 units, and phase three is the final 72 units. With regard to wastewater treatment and disposal, as previously mentioned, we are in an existing sanitary sewer district. In the booklet, there's a sewer concept plan comment letter from May 18, 2009, which confirms the technical ability to upgrade the county's existing infrastructure to handle 216 EDUs. There is also an August 26, 2009 memo from Mr. Rob Davis of the County Engineering Department confirming the continuing review of the sewer concept plan and verifying capacity in the system if the Arbor Pump Station discharges to manhole 76 or further downstream along Route 1. With regard to water supply, you've already heard that we are in a Tidewater service area. There is a Tidewater Utilities Ability to Serve letter contained in the public information book, and we will note that the elevated water storage tank is located approximately 1,000 feet from the center of our site. You can actually see the white dot on the proximity map just to the right of our rendered site plan. Finally, the last comment with regard to my presentation this evening. There is a known grave site, which has been identified to us as the Norwood Horsey Jackson Daisy Cemetery, that's located on the southern boundary of the Eagle Point Project. The location I just noted between the second and third northeasterlymost buildings is the approximate location of the burial site. It is currently surrounded by a fence. And we will note that the plus comments did not include any action from DeShippo on this, but we obviously will respect the boundaries of the cemetery. And if during construction any unmarked human remains are discovered, then obviously we are required to proceed in accordance with Delaware law and contact DeShippo accordingly.
Mm-hmm. What did you say about the traffic impact study way back? I didn't want to interrupt your presentation, but you talked about the traffic impact study being underway, right?
Yes, and we will. Mr. Derek Kennedy of Worth Rogers will address that completely. I believe he'll be the second speaker after me this evening. I mentioned just that the DelDOT TIS was part of the PLUS review process. They mm-hmm. mentioned it was ongoing.
There's not a new traffic study that hasn't been completed, is what you're not?
No.
Okay.
No, ma'am. There is not. Mr. Schrader.
Steve or gentlemen, if you've had the opportunity to review the PLUS comments, one of the things that you will see referred to in the Denrick portion of the comments is the fact that there was at one time an illegal landfill on site. That illegal landfill was operated by the prior owners of the property, not by my clients. However, as you would expect, it does cause us concern just as it causes everybody else concern. And as a result of that, there were activities that were taken by the developer in order to evaluate the site for the quantity and quality of the deleterious content on site, to make some decisions about how those concerns can be addressed, and to address proposed remediations. To that extent, I have with me this evening Doug Seavey, who is a professional engineer with JCM Environmental, and he will discuss for you the environmental concern. In particular, I believe there was reference at the prior hearing to methane gases, the effect of the site on aquifers that are adjacent, the cleanup, the remediation, and the mitigation process, the qualification under brownfields, and what happens if you don't clean this particular site up. So I'll turn this over to Mr. Seavey.
Hello, my name is Douglas Seavey, Remediation Branch Manager for JCM Environmental. I'm a professional engineer and registered Delaware 13699, also registered in Maryland, Virginia, Washington, New York, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. JCM's worked on the site extensively over the past several years, doing environmental investigation and proposing on the developing the remediation plan for the site. Denrick approved a cleanup work plan on the site in December 2004. As part of that, JCM and Tetra Tech Incorporated performed groundwater monitoring in forecourts of groundwater monitoring in 2005 and determined that there were no contaminants above the Denrick risk-based standards. In June of 2006, during excavation of the site, some workers complained about headaches. JCM at that time performed air monitoring, excavating 17 test pits at the site and registering the air in the site. We determined that there's methane in 3 of the 17 sites and carbon dioxide in 12 of the 17 sites. These materials come from the breakdown of organic material from the landfill on the site. Further work was done in February 2008 to delineate the extent of the site's waste, and based on that material, in January 2009, the state certified the site as a brownfield. The brownfield certification means that the state of Delaware, through the Delaware Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, will oversee all the cleanup on the site and will reimburse the contractor for the first $175,000 of the first $225,000 spent on the cleanup of the site and investigation of the site. If the cleanup is performed to the pleasing of Denrick, then they will basically give this developer clearance to work on the site without the risk, because the state will take over all liability because of their overseeing and their accepting the extent of cleanup on the site. Based on that, they're going to excavate as much of the waste as from all the areas that they're going to develop and dispose of it off-site. The waste has been determined from previous work to be household waste and construction demolition debris that is dumped here illegally over the years. Other materials might be found in stone excavation because it was an uncontrolled landfill. We do not know what was placed there over the years. The main issues that we found so far, the environmental problems, have been methane from the site. This will be remediated in the site through the removal of the waste. The methane comes from the breakdown of the organic material on the site. If that organic material is removed, that will control the methane. They'll also provide flares on the site, or not flares, I mean vents on the site, to allow the methane to escape, because methane is a very light gas. It'll tend to go straight up. And so the vents will be placed on the site to above the roof levels to allow any methane that is on the site to exit to above the height of any of the buildings. Since methane would then proceed to go up, it will have no impact on this site or any adjacent sites. During the excavation and all the other work on the site that will impact the ground, there will be continuous air monitoring on the site to ensure the safety of the workers. This work be overseen by JCM Environmental, and it'll also be overseen by DENREC, because DENREC has ultimate control over the environmental issues on the site. Any workers who are found, if there's workers found to be exposed to levels of methane, the work will stop to allow any materials to off-gas into the atmosphere. The site as a brownfield will help to clean it up. Right now it is a landfill. There is waste there, which could be having impact on this surrounding area. If the site is not developed, the waste will stay there. The only person who's going to clean up the site is the developer, because the state basically does not have the money to clean up a landfill that is not seen to have any active impact on the neighboring residents. The developer's cleanup will get the site clean.
Excuse me, could you say that again?
That this landfill is...
It's not developed, the state will not clean it up?
They do not have the money to clean it up sites right now. Because of the amount of sites that are in the state, this is a low-priority site. They will not clean it up.
You can speak to that as an expert?
I can speak to that. I cannot guarantee that, but because I am not the state. But I believe that the state's priority list is very long, and this is not one of the priority sites for cleanup.
And have you spoken to the Secretary of DENREC?
I have spoken to the Secretary, and I've spoken to the people from the Air Waste Management Board about the site, and they say that the site is not a regulatory cleanup priority for them.
Okay, thank you.
However, because that could be changed through political power from pressure from this town, from this council here. But right now it is not a priority. So the DENREC is pushing for it to be cleaned up through the brownfields process.
I see.
Part of the brownfields process, the developer cleans it up. The state oversees that cleanup. The state provides guidance on the cleanup, and they provide a small amount of remediation for money for the cleanup work. And the developer puts a lot more money into the cleanup. The brownfields program helps to encourage the redevelopment of previously contaminated sites instead of putting development into unimpacted or greenfield sites like farm fields and other areas that have not previously been developed. The brownfields program will help, and this the brownfield development of the site will help to get the site clean. It will help for housing to be put in here, and it will also protect the residents of the other areas around it by removing the waste from the developed areas. And right now, any methane that is there will just migrate to the surface on its own. However, with the development, there will be vents to allow the methane to be removed responsibly. Without the development, this will not occur.
Not this particular development, but just
development. Without a development
general,
of the site, correct.
Right. Even the old 80 units would have had to address some of these same concerns that you've just...
That is correct. However, with the 80 units, there's not enough money, income from those 80 units to do the cleanup on this site because of the extent of the site, you know, as required. All this work will be overseen by DENREC. DENREC takes this work very seriously and they watch it quite closely because they are subject to responsibility for the site. That if there is a liability issue in the future from site contamination, it will be covered by the state of Delaware through DENREC, because they, as part of the brownfields program. At this time, Mr. Schrader?
I'll ask you. I get it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
just
another question before you leave. When I'm looking at this site plan, and could you tell me if there's anything about this site plan that is a it is an environmentally sensitive developing district, and in our environmentally sensitive developing district, we're supposed to have a higher degree of development and higher standards and more protections, et cetera. Could you point out some of the features of this site plan that are exceptional in the way that they're protecting the environment, by any chance?
You have a good question, Mr. Coleman. What
was for him?
I'm sorry,
he's the environmentalist.
But Mr. Wadley's handed
the... He is the one who did the...
But this gentleman's an engineer.
Well, let me one final question. Maybe I can ask you this. Which would be more environmentally sensitive, 80 units or 216 units?
That depends upon if 80 units can happen or 216 or financially. But environmentally sensitive, it is better, I'd say, better to develop more units in one area.
Higher density is more sensitive.
More sensitive, because otherwise there'll be more units built in other areas of the city or the town that are not currently developed.
I guess.
I have a question.
Some people believe that, right?
Yes.
Not far away from there is a lake at East Plantations East that is a liner, has a liner under it. How would that methane and that disruption of whatever's there, how would that affect the lake, the stability of the lake and the liner and all of that? And would the builder here be responsible for anything that happened over at Plantations East, or would the state of Delaware assume that responsibility? How does that work?
There should be no impact to adjacent properties from the development of the site as far as like excavation causing, I'm not sure if excavation causing sites.
What happens to methane that travels underground? What does it become?
Methane travels underground. It stays methane. Eventually, it finds a way to the surface.
As
methane gas, ma'am.
It's not true that it becomes radon?
No, ma'am. Radon and methane are separate items. Radon comes from granite and the breakdown of granite over a long period of time. Methane is totally different material, ma'am.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further questions? Right.
Mr. Deaver, gentlemen, I will have all of these people available again at the conclusion of our presentation for any more questions that you may have in their areas of expertise. At this time, I would like to present to you Derek Kennedy, who is a traffic engineer with Orth Rogers, who will discuss the traffic impact study, the review of that by McCormick Taylor, the effect on Plantations Road, and the off-site improvements that have been recommended by the state of Delaware.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Derek Kennedy. I'm a senior project manager with Orth Rogers and Associates. We're serving as the transportation engineers and planners on the project. I have over 15 years' experience as a transportation planner. I hold a national certification as a professional transportation planner.
Speak up, the gentleman, with the, sure. Trying to hear mm-hmm. it all.
I will note.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. I will note that the traffic impact study was done under the direction of Bob Rogers, who is a Delaware PE. His name and seal is on the TIS. However, in his absence, I'd be the best person to be here speaking on the issues of traffic to the site tonight.
Traffic impact study that mentions the Western Parkway?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is going to be no Western Parkway. You are aware of that, are you? There's not going to be
right.
a Western
it's,
Parkway.
Well, I don't know.
So it's a little outdated. That's why I was asking about the traffic impact
right.
study.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll get to the
okay.
improvement plans and how they address
all right.
that.
Thank you.
What I want to do, I'll give you a quick summary of what was included in the TIS, what type of things we looked at, and then we'll get into the off-site improvement plans that DelDOT has requested that we contribute to. When we met with DelDOT in 2008, we scoped the project. We identified six intersections that were identified to be studied. Starting with the north, they include the Five Points intersections, Route 1 and 9, just to the west of there, what I call the connector road, the two intersections that tie Beaver Dam Road and Route 9 together. They were included in our study area. Heading south along along Plantations Road, we included the intersection of Shady Lane. We included the intersection, again, going south of Plantation and Robbinsville Road. And then at the southern end of our study area was the intersections of Plantations and Cedar Grove and Postal Lane, which, if you're familiar, they're two offset T intersections that really are close enough together, they almost operate as one. And then, of course, we analyzed the site access location, which locally is known as McKenzie Way as it comes out at Plantations Road. As with any TIS in this area, we look at three scenarios for peak hour conditions, AM peak, PM peak during the weekday, and we also look at a summertime Saturday peak hour condition. For each of those scenarios, we look at conditions under existing conditions. In this case, it was 2008 was our base year. We do a five-year projection to project the full build out of the site to 2013, and we do that future projection for both a no-build without the site and a build with the site scenario. The TIS was done with a proposed land use of 216 units, same land use that's being presented today, same number. To give you a sense of how much traffic that is, 216 residential units. In the AM peak hour, it's estimated to be 110 total vehicles, total entering and exiting. The PM peak hour, it's a total of 136 vehicles during that time. And during the Saturday peak hour, it's estimated to be 108, again, total entering and exiting vehicles.
A day.
per peak hour.
Mm-hmm.
So what we
per hour.
Right. What okay. we do, we
how many
do,
per day? Trips a day.
During the TAS, we didn't estimate daily trips. If I had to estimate, it would be around 1,000 trips per day for a site this
1,000
size.
1,000 trips a day.
An estimate. We don't have that in the TIS. And the reason we don't have it in the TIS is we typically look at peak hour. We do our existing counts. Mm-hmm. We identify the peak hour, and we put our peak hour volumes from the site on top of that same condition. So any improvements we're triggering or identifying at that time, we've covered for not just the peak hour, but obviously the rest of the day. So that's the reason why we don't have the daily trips in there, or at least that amount of detail in daily trips. So we're going through the process with DLDOT, and they finalized their review on August 14, 2009. They released their letter, and I think to Councilwoman Deaver, to answer your question about the plus, at the time of the plus hearing that Mr. Willie was talking about, I don't believe that letter was released yet. So technically we're still in the process, but they have released their letter. We have completed the TIS process up to this point with DLDOT.
Mm-hmm.
And just to quickly reference that letter and review the improvements that they're asking for.
When was that? When did that happen?
The letter was released August 14th.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The first improvement that DLDOT asked us to do as part of that letter was to improve Plantation Road from Shady to Robinsonville Road to include 12-foot lanes and 8-foot shoulders. That's about a half-mile section of road, sort of in the area of where our site entrance would come out at McKenzie Way. And that's to make sure that, you know, that section of road where we'll be coming into and our entrance improvements are up to DLDOT standards. I will note that that improvement does not include any widening beyond the existing lane configuration. There was some talk earlier about a widening project of 4 lanes on Plantation Road. That's not in this letter, so the improvement for that section of road is just to bring the existing lane assignments, existing cross-section up to standard as far as lane widths and shoulder widths. The second improvement that DLDOT asked for is to construct a DLDOT-approved entrance at McKenzie Way, where the site will be using as their main entrance, their only entrance. And that improvement will include a southbound exclusive left turn lane into the site. So heading southbound on Plantation is the road turning into the site. You'll have an exclusive left turn lane. In the northbound direction on Plantation Road, you'll have a deceleration lane or an exclusive right turn lane turning into the site. And the site will remain unsignalized, operated stop sign control, just as it does today. Next on the DLDOT list, they ask that we fund an equitable portion for the realignment of the Postal Lane and Cedar Grove Road intersections. Again, there are those two offset T intersections. And DLDOT, from a planning perspective, have been contemplating a project to realign those roads to a more traditional four-leg intersection. And they asked that we would contribute to that as part of our equitable fair share portion. The next item they ask for is that we enter in a traffic signal agreement to install a traffic signal at that new realigned intersection at Postal and Cedar Grove Road. The next thing they ask for is improvements at the intersection of Plantation Road and Robinsonville Road.
Well, that's not going to happen until 2014, you know.
Well, right, it's not.
That's going to happen 2014. We just found that yesterday.
The realignment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's okay. It's in the planning stages. It's in the future. It's not an improvement.
And that's on the fast track.
Yes, it is an improvement that, you know, the developer is not going to take the lead and do. Some of the improvements the developer will be doing on his own, but other improvements we're just contributing, you know,
yes.
And obviously it'll be at DLDOT's schedule. And
yes.
Mm-hmm. And at Robinsonville Road and Plantation Road, the improvements will include widening to include a northbound left turn lane on Plantation Road, so for vehicles turning onto Robinsonville, and also to include a right turn lane, which will be eastbound on Robinsonville Road for vehicles turning left, or for, excuse me, right, to go southbound on Plantation Road. And then they ask that we enter into an agreement to install a traffic signal at that intersection. The seventh improvement that they identify is an agreement to install a traffic signal at the intersection of Plantation Road and Shady Lane, which is the next intersection north where the Hennepin Landing subdivision has their fourth access or the fourth leg to that intersection. The eighth improvement they asked for is to fund an equitable portion towards potential future projects, and some of the projects they specifically mention in it are the grade separations of the five-point intersection and the realignment of Route 9 leading up to the five-points intersection. They did not mention the Western Parkway in there. So, again, they're projects that they're in the planning stages. There's no specific timeline or funding that I know of right now directly, you know, applied to it. But again, we would enter an agreement, and that if and when DLDOT decides to move those projects forward, we'd have some equitable portion to pay towards those. The ninth item they asked is to provide an internal connection to the adjacent Thompson property. I think Mr. Willie covered that in his presentation. The site plan does include a stub street connection to make that happen. And the final list of recommendations that they ask are various pedestrian bicyclist type improvements that I won't get into detail about, but signing and striping type things, standard items that we're aware of and we're certainly comply with.
I guess they asked for that connectivity in case of an emergency. They couldn't all get out the same road. They only have one entrance and exit, from what I could see. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they tend to keep vehicles off the main road as much as possible, and that's a DLDOT philosophy.
One way in, one way out.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I guess then the next steps in the process would be to, come back to DLDOT and negotiate when they talk about fair share contributions and timeline scheduling, things like that. We're not at that point yet. I think when my client is assured that he has a project to move forward with, we'd be back with our entrance permit process, ironing out those details. But that is that's the summary of what DLDOT is asking for and where we're at with the traffic impact study. And if there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
When I guess the development office, the state development office referred, or DLDOT referred to the improvements that they would like to see as significant. How do you read that? Does that mean just expensive, extensive, costly? I mean, it sounds like they want you to do a lot of things when they use the word significant.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they used the word, but if it was...
It was in correspondence.
It was probably associated with the grade separation of 5 points. And by grade separation, they mean a highway-type interchange replacing the intersection that's there now,
mm-hmm.
The relocation of Route 9.
Going back to the other application we had with 80 units, I don't believe they referred to the improvements that would be necessary for that development as being significant. So this is, I think, a new wrinkle in the development. I'm just wondering what's your take on the word significant as it applies to this application?
I believe it means that it's not something they would expect a developer to take the lead on and do on their own. They'd have to contribute, and it would be a DLDOT project, as opposed to, say, our entrance improvements and frontage improvements, where the developer would be expected to do that work up front as part of that project cost.
There's a lot of plans they're talking about that may not happen. In fact, I don't think some of them are going to happen at all. So where do we stand on that?
Right. Well, that's I guess that's the big question.
That's true.
If it's not in their five-year improvement plan,
as a councilwoman, I have to make a decision on this. And you're talking about you're going to contribute to this, this, and this, and I don't know if those things are going to happen.
There are certain improvements in there. I think of the 10 things that they've asked for, three of them were improvements that we'd contribute to that would become DLDOT projects.
Mm-hmm.
The other seven were items that either the developer himself would do, or it would be done through a collaboration of various other developments in the area. As part of the TIS, there was 9 other committed developments that we've identified and included their traffic into the study as well. And I suspect that a lot of them are going to have to make those same agreements for funding with DLDOT.
Let me, if you'll permit me, Ms. Deaver, I just want to add one thing to Mr. Kennedy's answer, and I think it's important because you're right. You do have to make a decision, an informed decision, on what you want to do with this particular application based upon the things we know this evening. One of the things that you raised as a concern was the fact, for instance, that the Western Parkway no longer is a planned event by DLDOT. I believe at the Planning and Zoning Commission, Representative Schwarzkopf took some credit for that. You may want to take some credit for that. Certainly the people behind us in the room want to take some credit for that, but
that doesn't matter. They're talking about phantom roads
aren't
going to happen.
If you'll just let me finish,
in this study.
Right, but if you'll just let me finish, please, I'll get to my conclusion, and you can comment. I think we're going to be on the same page. The problem is that notwithstanding the opposition, when the scoping meeting takes place between the developer, Orth Rogers and DelDOT, that took place in June of 2008. And it's at that scoping meeting where they identify all the possible projects along Plantations Road that are either real or imaginary or whatever that have to be taken into consideration in preparing a traffic impact study. That's what Orth Rogers did. Since June of 2008, the political landscape has changed. Western Parkway is gone, but nonetheless, these are the things that were taken into consideration as a part of what DelDOT told the engineer it should study. And as you say, some of them are gone. There may be more that are gone before it's all over, and we'll have to react accordingly.
Phantom roads.
Well, and I think you remember when I worked for the commission, I used to talk about the Cooper roads.
You made up that phrase.
I came up with the phrase, the phantom roads, because every piece of property between Route 1 and Plantations Road from one end of town to the other had a 60-foot right-of-way on it.
That's right.
And I'll ask you this question, Ms. Deaver, did any of them ever get built?
Nope.
Not one.
Phantom roads.
They were phantom roads. I have Ms. Linda Farrell-Smith with me, who is a rental market expert who is going to describe her experience with the rental market. Market research indicating what the need is for this particular project in this particular area, how that benefits Sussex County. And there were some issues raised about the tenant qualification process at the Planning and Zoning Commission, and she's going to describe that for us also. So I'll call Ms. Smith to the podium.
Good evening. My name is Linda Smith. I have been the multifamily housing development management marketing and design for the past 20 years. I have overseen the development of over 20,000 units between Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. I was vice president of Delaware Apartment Station for two terms. Continue to have that membership in that association. I'm also with the National Apartment Association. I was a member of Vintage Properties, which was one of the largest property management companies in Delaware, and since then I've moved on and just started a consulting business on multifamily housing management, design, and marketing. This particular property is 200 units that are here, and DSHA did a needs assessment, and their projection for 2012 projects that Sussex County will add 9,600 households. It's a lot of households in Sussex County, and I have to tell you, I've been out doing the market research. I've shopped all the apartments out there, and they're very far and few between. The other interesting portion of that is that currently 22% of the housing inventory for Sussex County is comprised of renter-occupied units. That doesn't include seasonals. Just take the seasonals out of it. So that number is 10,000 units, of which 35% are multifamily housing structures. What that means is that over 8,000 of them are single-family homes. I was on the board of the Newcastle County Rental Housing Committee, and our biggest problem were small owners of four units, one units here, and things like that in terms of management. So when you have density like this, you have a much better managed product so that there are screening, the buildings are taken care of, and it ends up being a much better situation than having the sprawl of residents all over the place in these homes that may not be taken care of. Under the criterias for renters in these units, there are criminal background checks on every single apartment renter, as well as credit checks, and there are income criteria and guidelines that they have to follow. The reality of it is that you get a much better managed and well taken care of property when it's clustered and in a high density situation. The other thing is that clearly there is a need for this rental housing in Sussex County, because there just isn't anything out there at this point, and I've been out there on foot. There's nothing out there that comes even close to what this group is presenting in terms of apartments.
People are not building apartment buildings?
Not down in this area. There's Smyrna, Dover, but not in this area. And I'll tell you, not this quality. And I think that's the difference, is that it's quality housing, and there's a need for it. There's a real desperate need for it.
But there's a market, but they're not building?
Well, I think what's happening is that there's a lot of property up in Dover that has been developed. But down in this way, they just have not developed a whole lot of the land. And I think part of it is that I'm assuming that there's not very much zoning for multifamily housing. But there is clearly a need.
Mm-hmm. Clearly. I think there's a substantial zoning permitting the type of thing. I think, but the market basically dictated it was more multifamily being a townhouse type of construction. So the rage here was more or less that, as opposed, it's a different market. So, but I question, you know, when you say that people prefer, or I don't know who, somebody likes higher density, or it's easier to manage.
It's a better managed situation.
Right, but the people who are renting, if they have a preference over a single family home to rent with their kids and their family, versus a high density type of project, they'll take the single family. They'll take the lower density.
I disagree with you.
Well, I think you're wrong. You may think I'm wrong, but I think you're wrong.
I disagree with you. Let me tell you why.
Tell me why.
It depends on your landlord.
Oh, well,
if you have a great landlord. Okay. Sure, it's great.
Well, we'll somehow write that into legislation. Have to have great landlords.
Well, it's about professional management. That's what it really boils down to. It's about having your property professional managed.
That's all stuff we can't really put a finger on. Mm-hmm. What we can put a finger on is what people prefer. And I know, because I sell real estate also, and I have a little, I take some of these continuing education courses that I'm forced to take. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I pick up some tidbits of information that are useful. And I've always heard that high-density projects, multifamily, et cetera, are on the low preference of whether you're a single family, whether you're an empty nester, a family, whatever. Across the spectrum of people looking for housing, the higher density is at the lower end of the demand scale versus a single family and the lower density and things like that.
I believe that's all about the American dream.
Exactly.
I think the average American still wants the white picket fence in a home, so that's clear. But when it comes to living in an apartment setting, high density with a clubhouse and a pool where all those things are included and a professional management company that will come out and take care of your leaky sink instead of waiting for Joe landlord who really doesn't care, who's in a different state. Big difference.
Okay, but we can't legislate big that. That's what we would hope for if this got approved at this density and everything.
Absolutely. Okay. And you can only assume that, being the investment that they're putting into it, that clearly they'll have a professional management company.
All right. Please continue.
Pardon me?
Please continue. Are you finished?
I'm finished.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Some brief closing comments, gentlemen, and Ms. Deaver, and then we'll be available for any further questioning that you may have. Let me begin with this, and that is that we have addressed for you, I think, satisfactorily the brownfield cleanup, and I should point out the fact that the Department of Natural Resources is not opposed to either the cleanup of this site or this particular application. In fact, it's certified under 7 Delaware Code, Chapter 91, as a brownfield site and has been qualified for grants. When I came in this evening, I don't know if you came in the same way I did, there was some gentleman out front with a sign that said that we don't want our children to live on a toxic dump. Well, quite frankly, we don't either. I don't know of anybody in this room who wants anybody to live on a toxic dump. And for that reason, you do have brownfield legislation, which was proposed by the state. And as Mr. CV pointed out, that brownfield litigation or claim mitigation is considered a green practice that is used as a methodology by which the state, at no expense to itself, can see to it that sites are cleaned up. If this project goes forward and it goes forward with this brownfield certification, you can consider this a green building practice. It will result in some green standards and LEED standards being applied, and the program has been developed by the state in order to see that these things take place. Mr. Seavey, in response to Ms. Deaver's question, has said, it's not the highest priority. We can't tell you quite where it will go, but we can tell you that whatever happens if this project is not approved is that it will not be cleaned up by this particular developer. It may be cleaned up by someone some other day at some other time. We don't know who that will be. There has been discussion by Mr. Kennedy of the traffic impact study, and I think we're all in agreement that there have been facts that have changed. Certainly the Western Parkway is gone, the Phantom Roads are gone, and the dynamics of the Department of Transportation may be mysterious to all of us. But nonetheless, they have asked by through McCormick Taylor that certain off-site improvements be made, and we are in agreement that those off-site improvements or contributions will be made by this developer if this project is approved. We've also spoken briefly about the unmarked grave situation in the report and the subsequent supplemental report from the State Historic Preservation Office about the grave sites that are located on this particular project. We have acknowledged and will continue to acknowledge that they should be respected, whether they are of at the site that we know of or whether they are found at other portions of this particular project site. I would note, and I believe, Ms. Deaver, you were here when we had the Planning Commission hearing, that at least the Lenape Indians and the Nanticoke Indians were very concerned about respect of their ancestors. And I would again reiterate that we likewise have the same respect and will hopefully be able to do all the things that would be appropriate for these grave sites. Lastly, we have just had a dialogue concerning the affordable program, rental program. I do want to point out that the affordable rental program is something that is addressed in your very own comp plan. There are some interesting statistics that were put in that comp plan study about, and I hate to use the word affordable. I always tell my witnesses, don't use the word affordable, because affordable housing has begun to mean programs that are government approved. But these are economically affordable apartment units, as well as being a part of the Sussex County rental program. That means that they will not be $2,000 a month. They will not be condominium units rented for seasonal or weekly rentals. This is intended to be for persons who will stay in these units for some period of time. I trust that you all are familiar with your own criterion for renting in these projects, but under your very own ordinance, a person who comes to these rental units must have been a full-time resident of Sussex County for at least 12 months prior to entry into the project. They must be able to pass a criminal background test, and they must also have the economic ability to pay for the rental units, and that is part of the professional management system that was described by Ms. Smith. In conclusion, what I would like to point out to you is that we have a project which has previously been approved as a conditional use for multifamily dwellings on site. It is comp plan compliant. There was no objection from the Office of State Planning and Coordination through the PLUS process. DLDOT has issued its letter of no objections and its wish list of off-site improvements, which may or may not come to pass. We have yet to hear from the Planning and Zoning Commission, but the document which closes the record was received today from the county, and that is the rental agreement. And that means the record will be closed, and in all likelihood, the next opportunity for the Planning Commission to address this particular application will occur on October 15th when it has its mid-month meeting. I have, as I customarily do, provided in this particular book a list of proposed conditions and finding of fact, not that they are binding upon you, but simply to give you something to work from if you choose to favor this application. All of us are available for any further questions that you may have concerning this particular application. Thank you for your time and your thoughtful attention.
Thank you.
Does council have any questions for the applicant? Ms. Deaver.
I did talk with the folks from DENREC about this, how they recoup these properties, and my understanding is that they're going to they plan to cover it with some sort of they're going to cover it, okay, and then they're going to put all those apartment buildings on top of this cover. And just, you know, we have so many factors to look at. That's not our decision, but don't you think there are some concerns, which would be some concerns from the neighbors who would have to live around there, as to how stable that kind of thing is going to be with this gas coming up the pipes and all this whole, you know, it's not something, it's up to DENREC, but it's something that we do have to consider when these people are here and, you know, what they would have to live with.
Well, I think you're partly right in the sense that, yes, they're entitled to be concerned. I'm not sure just saying that we're going to cover up the site is the only thing that will take place here. There will be excavation and removal of the deleterious content within the soil. Most likely it will have to come back in and be restored in some way. And as to the stability...
Know that, all the material would be removed? No, I don't know that.
I'm not sure, because I'm not the engineer. We'll get right. Mr. Seavey back up.
And it's hard for us to, try to figure that out.
Well, and I think
we're not DNREC.
We have to rely upon DNREC to administer its own programs, and theoretically they know as much or more about it as anybody. Mm-hmm. We'll have an outside conversation about that some other time. But ultimately, when you're talking about the stability of the site, ma'am, we have to be able to put structures on this site. And that means that the
compaction... But you're looking at 216.
But we also have to look at the compaction of the soils. We have to look at the content of the soil. We have the same health and safety issues that everybody around us does. We're no different. In fact, while the people who are going to speak in opposition to this live off-site, we're proposing to put people on this site. And you can't do that lightly without thoughtfully considering the impact of what you do, how you do it, and how you clean it up. I agree with you. There is reason always to be concerned about any environmental site. But I think it's more than just simply covering up the site.
But you're talking about so much impervious cover, and DNREC is telling me in a meeting that I had right here at the building that they're going to cover the whole thing. Well, they're going to cover it. There's going to be a cover over it. How much impervious surface can you have if it's all covered?
Well, I don't think it's going to be 100% impervious. Can you address that?
I mean...
DNREC exactly does not do the site. I'm sorry. DNREC
actually does not develop the site. Mr. Banning's developing the site, and waste will be removed from the areas that they're going to be building on. And
all of it will be removed?
Just from where they're developing?
From the areas where they're developing, all the waste will be removed, because you can't build on waste. If you build on waste,
the buildings will be cleaned out, is what you're saying, because it's a huge pit over there. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. And the waste will be removed from that excavated area, from where they're going to be worked on. Stable fill will be put in, because you can't build on top of the waste. There will be differential settlement, which
there
means that
there won't be any cover over all of it, the way I was told?
The entire site will not be covered, ma'am.
It will not be covered?
No.
That's what I was told by Mrs. Lindsay Hall.
Well, that's all well and good, but let me offer you this.
But he's not with DNREC.
But Lindsay Hall is not the developer of the site. Mr. Banning is developing the site.
But DNREC has to sign off of it.
But you understand, Ms. Neaver, of course, that under your own zoning ordinance, there is only so much surface area that can actually be covered. I mean, we have to meet and comply with all of the height, area, bulk requirements of your very own zoning ordinance. And that, I don't know of any place in Sussex County where you can get 100% cover.
Well, that's what I'm hearing from DNREC, is to protect the area. It's... on the brownfields.
We respectfully disagree that we're going to do 100%.
I'm no expert. I'm just telling you. I'm just asking these questions.
On the environmental sites, one thing that you... Yes, one thing that they can do is cover the entire site. We've done that in some of our sites. However, those are sites that you can't rebuild on top of the cover, because the cover will be put on top of the waste. And if you can't build on top of the waste, you have to remove all the material from that.
Okay,
Lindsay Hall, that is one of the stuff. Encapsulation or covering everything is something that they do at many sites, but not this site.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Cole?
And the site plan that we're looking at is not necessarily what's going to be built, is that right?
That is correct, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So we don't really know.
Well, it is a conditional use and being imposed on a change of zone that you are able to make limitations on the amount of multifamily dwellings and some of the configuration. The answer always I give is that not only is DNREC involved here, there are 25 other regulatory agencies that have to be complied with, whether it's Fire Marshal, DLDOT, or whatever. I've never seen a plan that came through here that came back for a site plan that was the same.
So we are giving extra density in return for 32 affordable rentals.
Among other things, yes.
Well, couldn't it have been more?
Well, no. What I'm also suggesting to you is that not only is there 32 additional units, you're also looking at the brownfield cleanup.
No, that's not our decision. Our decision is whether that many homes should go on a place like that. And it's a good ordinance, but we're giving an awful lot for a very little return.
Ma'am, y'all wrote it and passed it.
Well, we might change it.
Making the application that it permits.
I didn't vote for it. I wasn't here.
Okay. Any other questions, Ms. Deaver?
That's it.
Mr. Cole?
Earlier, your comments were density similar to Dover and Harrington. Could we get more, and maybe you could help us, somebody, off of Plantation Road, could you give us something that would be similar to this in this immediate area? You know, we try to keep housing and types and things compatible. So coming off of Plantation Road, do we have anything that's close to this density or similar?
I think more likely you'll see those.
Because other than Dover, than Harrington, you know, those aren't really good ones because that's the first we've gone that far on getting, you know, any.
If you take a look at this aerial photo, you want to do it, Jim?
Right, show us anything that would have it.
This aerial photo is not quite going to get there, but the Village of Five Points is right here, and there is multifamily density on the east side of Village of Five Point that's probably structured very similar to what you see here.
Okay, but in off of Plantation Road, there's nothing that accesses Plantation Road that would have that density, would it?
This is an apartment complex on Route 1.
Well, that's commercial. Yeah, that was permitted in a commercial district. But I'm just trying to say, is there anything off of Plantation Road, which was residentially zoned land, that has a similar density? I don't think there is. Okay. All right.
But Village of Five Points is, in fact, closer than Harrington.
That is. You are right. You are right.
As is the project next to the state police.
I just want to make sure you knew where you were. Anyway, I'm only kidding.
I'm struggling, sir.
That's okay. No, you're not. You're doing the best you can. The sewer capacity. I was reading this in here, one of these packages. 4 EDUs to the acre is what the plan called for. Is that correct? Right, that engineering department, the plan that we have for that area is 4 units to the acre?
That's right.
Pardon?
Yes, sir. The
site?
In the planning document, it was approved for 80 as a result of the conditional use. If it hadn't been for the conditional use, it would have been 4 per year.
Okay, correct. 4 per. Okay. So as I read that, now for you all to go from the 80 units that was basically around the 4 units to the acre, you must deviate from the plan and bypass all the existing. I think I read that for you to get this density, you'll have to bypass the existing lines in the ground. And
yes,
I guess
the 80 units would have been able to flow into the current existing gravity sewer and Plantation Road.
Okay.
At 216, we have to go down Shady Lane and either join up with the Vineyards Village project or go ourselves under Route 1 and connect to a manhole located.
Show me how far you've got to go so that we can get this development with sewer lines.
Horse Main will come to here,
okay,
which is the intersection of Plantation and Shady, and depending on what happens at Vineyards, either a joint Horse Main over under Route 1, discharging to Gravity Manhole 76 is located about here.
So construction along where your finger went, construction would occur?
Yes, pump station is located here on the proposed plan.
So you got to tear it. You'll have to tear up all that roadway or on the easements to get to that other to do this.
I don't think we actually would tear up. We may have to tear up some roadway, but it is a 4-inch horse main, be buried with 42 inches of cover. So it would not be major construction as if it were an 8-inch or 10-inch gravity line. Mm-hmm. But yes.
Okay.
Right. We would have some construction along the entire route.
All right. Okay. So you'll have to deviate from the county's plan to do what you do. Okay. When we get back to the Native American and the graves and stuff like that, as I looked at the old plan showing the 80 units, there's much more open space and different things like that. So wouldn't it make sense, or tell me why it doesn't make sense, that the AR1 zoning or the other plan that we had in front of us, which was going to also, you know, clean up the site, why that wouldn't be more sensitive to the... wouldn't it be able to afford more protection to any burial sites as opposed to this intense development that you're proposing?
Well, I think the answer really is not so much as an either or. It is that on any construction site, wherever you are in this county, there is a likelihood that there are going to be unforeseen site conditions. Mm-hmm. These unmarked graves, if they exist, in fact, would be an unforeseen site condition to which we would have to react. If the case comes about, Mr. Cole, that there are 1, 2, or 3, a small number, then that's much more easy to accommodate than a larger number. But as we've discussed about a number of things this evening, we don't actually know that detail yet until we get to the point that we have, in fact, made that study. as we go forward and go through the process, if this is approved and we get the final site plan, then those determinations will, in fact, have been made, and there may very well be changes in the proposal in terms of the number of units that are going to be built or the site, the size of the site that's available based upon what we find as a result of on-site conditions. And if that's the case, then we have to accommodate them.
Last question would be, as I didn't see anything. I saw a map or something, a chart showing something about the school district. You had no comments from Cape and Lopen?
We had no comments from the Cape and Lopen School District.
Okay. You did ask for some, right? Or it goes through the
plus? It goes through the plus process.
Yeah, they typically don't.
They did not respond?
Apparently, school districts don't respond to casinos.
Most of them. Unless we beg them, they will sometimes respond, children. But they don't usually.
They were sent notice. They did not respond to direct notice.
That's
to
us. Cape and Lopen School District.
Well, all the school districts. Okay, thank you. That's all.
Mr. Vincent?
A couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
Is there on this site any wellhead protection areas? And if so, where?
Mr. Willie will tell us.
Okay. The wellhead protection areas should be in your data book.
What number?
Under tab 3.
We can't have wells there.
Well, there will be no wells.
There won't be any,
right.
Won't
be any wells. Mm-hmm.
It's public water. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But that's not the question that was asked.
Right. No, I live on that road.
Okay, it is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th map in behind number 3 divider.
And for what it's worth, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Mr. Willie buy tabs A, B, C, D, and E in the future.
Actually, Mr. Willie prefers tabs with writing on them, but Mr. Schrader likes to keep things simple with numbers. We're going to continue to work on that problem. You will notice on the on that map, it's called Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, Water Supply, Wellhead, and Excellent Recharge Areas. The Arbors of Cottagedale is located at the tip of the red arrow.
Okay.
And there are no wellhead areas on this site.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I think I understood a while ago that at this point in time, you do not know if there are any unmarked burial sites on this property.
I can't say that for sure, because as a result of the testimony that was given at the Planning Commission, and Mr. Jackson, who was the owner of the house out front, described some of the family, I believe it was Mr. Jackson, who discussed some interments back there. And we have reason to suspect that there are.
Okay.
And that is, we think there are. It's not that we think that there are not.
Okay. And obviously there are laws that require you to do certain things if
yes.
There are. Thank you.
Mr. Wilson?
How far is your burial going to be from your development? The one on the left-hand upper corner there, on the down to the center. How far away is that going to be from that?
Mr. Willie will describe that for you.
Your fence,
right.
You said you got a fence on it.
Yes, sir. If... right where you were in behind tab 3, if you were to go, 4 or 5 more maps, there is one that looks like this, labeled site plan rendering. Okay.
And
if the scale is a little better on that one. The fenced area is, you can see the white outline of the fence in the aerial photo. It's just to the east of this townhouse. It runs along here to approximately the start of this first building, and it's right in there. It's fenced, and that southerly portion of that fence at the last public hearing was reported to be approximately 3 or 4 feet south of our existing property line. Apparently there was some question as to whether the previous property owner had asked if they could move the fence back off the property. We'll also note that, of course, the required 20-foot landscape buffer would be in that area also. So by law, for the first 20 feet, we couldn't disturb that anyhow.
Obviously, from there, we require to have building setbacks, but if we were to find evidence of additional graves to the south, then we would have to modify the site plan. But right now, we know that the graves are along that northerly property line in the location I noted.
Mr. Wilson, I would also point out, and I made my copy from the staff's file for this particular project, and what I have is a portion of the Eagle Point Section 1 final site plan that was approved by the Planning Commission. My particular copy has the notations of Mr. Abbott concerning the approval of the site plan in June of 2002, and I have on mine highlighted in yellow, if you want a copy of it, the gravesite is actually surveyed in, and it's got a meets and bounds description as it was known to exist in 2002. Based upon the subsequent information, we believe that that may not include all of the gravesites, but at least that has been demarked and is noted with the fence and has been shown on an approved site plan of the counties.
So this has got, how far is this, what's the law say we got to be away from it, how far?
Well, if I'm reading this correctly, it appears as if the corners of the fence are actually on the property line and the grave area is within the confines of Eagle Point. The construction setback, or the setback line, appears to be 20 feet from on the final site plan.
We should be at least that.
We're going to be more than 20. Okay. Again, it depends on what we find and where we find it.
Okay. I mean, if you need to go any further, then you would have to cut around it. Is that what the,
again,
the goal?
I've been admonished not to be repetitive, but we intend to accommodate that cemetery.
Right. No intent not to. Right.
Right.
Anything else, Mr. Wilson? Did I understand you when you said there was 25 regulatory agencies that you had to comply?
I have a list of regulatory agencies that comment regularly on planning and zoning matters. I didn't bring my checklist with me, but the people who work with me know that I have a checklist of all the regulatory agencies, and I believe the total number is 26.
Okay.
Regulatory agencies, state and federal, that have the privilege of commenting on any particular action that's taken by somebody in the land use planning process, not every agency will comment. Obviously, U.S. Fish and Wildlife,
very
as an example, has the opportunity to comment on this project, but there are no fishing that I know of.
Any other comments or questions from council?
Yes. You know, this ordinance was to provide some affordable housing apartments, and I live on this road, and this area used to be considered out in the country, but right now it's the beach. That's considered the beach. Are we going to be providing apartment buildings to folks who come in, rent the things, and then rent them out to people who just want to be here in the summers and just party? And that, you know, I mean, are we accomplishing what we're looking for? This is called the beach area here.
Again, ma'am, the qualifications that are required by your ordinance are that an applicant be a full-time resident for at least one full year prior to being qualified to rent a unit in this particular project.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to me that would preclude people from simply renting a unit and coming in and saying that I'm going to be here for 2 weeks in the month of July and I'm going to rent a unit and get out of here.
I don't think we can keep them from subletting or having guests. You know,
you're quite right. We can't keep them from having guests, but there are regulations that can be imposed either by the lease or by your very own ordinance, if you choose to do so, that will identify the number of occupants that can be placed in a particular unit. As we have a single bedroom unit as an example. Obviously, you're not going to want 16 people living there for 2 weeks in July. I'm not sure that...
No, that does happen around here.
I'm keenly aware that that happens. I have a practice other than this where that sometimes happens.
Yes, it does happen.
And I have represented owners' associations in various communities where they've attempted to define what is a family, what is a related family. There are various federal laws that are involved that need to be complied with. I acknowledge you have a valid concern. I can't tell you that either you or I are going to be able to fix it.
But a clarification on this program, affordable housing program, the MPUH or whatever it is. It's only the 32 units, mm-hmm. that are under this these restrictions of the 1 year, et cetera, et cetera. The balance of the 200 and some units, or 100 and some units, are not under the restrictions of the MUPH. They all don't go through that scrutiny. Can anybody comment on that, or something that we might have to get clarification on? Are you familiar how?
We may have to get clarification, right, but I believe that's the ones that would be affected. Okay. However, they do have to be fully integrated into the
Well, I understand all that,
project.
But I just think that when we apply these rules and stuff, I think it only applies to those units that we have those restrictions on. I don't know if it applies to this whole project.
Well, we're getting away from...
So we'll find out later.
We're getting away from land use planning, but ultimately what happens with a landlord in a situation such as this, is they do have a written lease. It's required by Delaware Landlord-Tenant Code. The number of occupants needs to be identified. Fire Marshal has a little something to say about how many occupants can go into a particular unit. My client's practice in the past is to follow the same procedures as the county dictates by way of doing the financial background check and the criminal check and a residency check. And we also have a no subletting requirement in there. So, I mean,
but
we
that's
can,
with this owner, if this whole project gets sold, we don't know what to, anyway.
And Mr. Cole, you're a realtor and you've
understand that works.
We can build a whole wall of paper around these units, but what people do in the real world is sometimes different.
I just wanted to make sure that we didn't think that the whole project is going to be under this.
No, but what I am confirming for you is that we intend to adopt the same criteria for the balance of the project.
I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schrader.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore, please.
Yes, I do have one question for Mr. Schrader. There's been several questions concerning the graveyard grave sites. Will access be provided to the grave sites for any descendants?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Moore, could you continue the public hearing?
Yes. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in favor of this application or be recognized? Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor or be recognized? Seeing none, is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Yes, ma'am. Come forward and sign.